are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Oh, your assistant's calling me.
Oh, okay. Tell her to stop bugging you.
I'm going to shut my phone off. It was a great reminder. She actually assisted me.
Yeah. I reached out to Phil because I'd like to do podcast, I'd like to do a three-way with you, Phil, and myself.
Sure.
You know, I think that'd be cool.
Be great.
Yeah. Where is the sound okay? Yep. Where do you live?
I live, unfortunately, the moment in the People's Republic of San Francisco.
Oh, my God.
I'm getting out of there real fast.
Oh, yeah? You got to move to Texas or one of those states?
I haven't quite made up my mind yet. My business is a California business.
Yeah.
So I can't, you know, like, we make most of the parts of at least X3. Now, the OsteoStrong medical devices are a little more complicated. They have parts all over the place. But it's better for me to stay in California. So I got some options, but it's amazing how San Francisco is so much worse when it comes to just sort of tyranny type behavior. And neighbors telling on each other for not wearing masks in their backyard.
Yeah, LA's not much better.
No.
You know, I'm in the middle. I don't know if you know where I'm looking in the Central Valley. And compared to LA and San Francisco, we're conservative. But you go down into LA. I spent a lot of time down there, obviously, when I was training with Gold and at Gold's Gym. And
yeah,
it's a different animal. It's kind of sad, actually.
It's terribly sad what has happened. It
really is. And then all the stuff that's going on, I don't know. I hope this thing straightens out pretty soon. But, you know, I keep telling people, if the election was yesterday, this would all be gone, or most of it would be gone.
I tell people coronavirus ends on November 4th.
It ends on November 4th, exactly.
Yeah, unfortunately, with San Francisco, a lot of the policies are long-term. I mean, you know, like giving alcohol and marijuana to homeless.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, like, is that going to make things better? Like, they have substance abuse problems.
Yeah, I know.
That's their biggest issue. Like,
you know, you've heard of that expression, truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
We're there.
We are there.
This is so weird. It's like, you can't even, and it's so, and now it's so damn blatant and transparent. It's like, oh shit. And we're still buying, you know, so many of them are buying it.
And the elected officials in San Francisco, it's like their policy fails and then they double down on it.
Yeah. I guess that's what you're supposed to do. I don't know.
Yeah.
Brutal. Hey, John, did you tell me when we talked earlier on the phone before the podcast a while back that you bought Serious Growth when you were in seventh grade?
That's right.
Holy crap.
Yeah. White cover, picture Tom Platz, black and white on the front.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, I've been into all these years and you don't sometimes, I don't know, maybe you feel this way too now, because you've invented a bunch of stuff and people are using your products, but it's really humbling when I run into somebody that, like yourself, who purchased this thing when you were in the seventh grade. I mean, I knew the products that we wrote back then were a big hit, but I didn't really understand, you know, how it impacted so many people. I think that you're probably going to see the same thing with your products.
I already have.
Yeah,
just
no question.
I've been using X3 for 3 years, and they send me transformation pictures that are, you know, like life-changing.
Yeah.
Totally life-changing.
Yeah.
And I think that fitness is such a strange industry. Like, we've known for 40 years that cardiovascular exercise increases cortisol, which promotes the sacrifice of muscular tissue and the storage of body fat. So it gives people exactly the opposite that they want.
Yeah.
And they think they're getting. This research has been out for 40 years. So why doesn't the fitness industry understand this?
Yeah.
Why don't they talk about it?
Yeah.
You know, they just don't. So my point is, there's a couple of things out there. I think Arthur Jones wrote some things. I think Mike Mentzer wrote some things. Boy, he was, I think there was one book he wrote that was just so hard to follow.
Mike was a Jesus. Did you ever meet Mike?
No, I never did.
Well, I tell you, I did. And I got to know him kind of well. He's kind of hard to get to know anyway. I think he was a genius, you know, and I think all the craziness went along with that. Yeah. But I met him, and yeah, he was a tough one.
But I mean, other than what I just mentioned, like what have been like the important things that we've discovered?
Yeah.
Like what are like nothing.
Yeah.
Not much. I refer to the fitness as the most failed endeavor, human endeavor. If you think about like who actually looks like they exercise, you know, I mean, really looks impressive, you know, male or female. Is it 1% of the population? Maybe 0.1% of the population?
Yeah.
Like,
not very many.
No. And this is the attitude. I think the people that are a little more thoughtful in their comments, when you say, why don't you exercise? And they're like, I don't know. I know a lot of people exercise and they look terrible.
Right.
They don't look like anything. Yeah. So I can look like I don't exercise by not exercising.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm doing.
Save the energy.
Right. And so I just, there's so little understanding. And also, we do this with so many subjects. Like, nobody wants to know how their iPhone works. They just want it to work, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, there's no instructions that come with an iPhone. You just get it, you turn it on, you go.
Yeah.
That's not how fitness really is, because it's the human body. And if you don't understand what's happening in the human body, you're going to screw something up.
Yeah.
You're going to get something wrong. You're going to end up, and I'm not even exaggerating here. You know, I read somewhere somebody saying, I'm doing a hybrid between the South Beach diet, which says carbohydrates are good, and the keto diet, which says fats are good. And so all I eat is cheese pizza. This is not even a joke. It's just like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't even know what to say. And people tend to not want to understand. They just want like bullet points.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, they want what they want to hear. Sort of like people watch the news. Like, they don't want to watch the news that tells them the truth. They want to watch the news that tells them their truth, which is really bullshit.
Yeah.
There is no such thing as your truth. There is the truth and then the shit you want to believe.
Yeah, exactly.
They're rarely the same.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you big beyond belief in the Bulgarian power burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
You know, unfortunately, what you're saying applies to a lot of the trainers that are out there. Most of them are fake, as far as I'm concerned, because they're exactly what you're talking about. They don't know the why of why the fuck you should be doing certain things.
It just, no idea.
It blows my mind. And you know, I guess at some point I had a podcast with somebody that said, "Well, eventually this pendulum will swing," but I don't know about that. You know, where it'll correct itself.
I think there needs to be a catalyst. I think Dr. Baker, Sean Baker, he's been on your podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
He's one of the guys that and he and I are good friends. Like me is sort of like, no, fuck you. You need to understand this. Don't just say like, you know, meat is good and then, you know, right. And then have like a key lime pie after you're done with your small steak and then think, oh, yeah, carnivore, I'm all set. I don't even need to learn anything. It's information about the human body that's worth learning doesn't fit in a little internet meme.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't fit in a tiny little quote. It's more complicated than that.
Definitely.
And you've got to learn why.
Yeah.
And anybody that reads his book or Dr. Paul Saladino's book, by the way, you need to have him on your show too. It's just, you got to understand why these nutrition decisions are the right decisions to make.
Yeah.
So you read, if you read the text, it's like, oh, well, this is obvious.
Yeah.
But you need to understand it. There's nothing wrong with understanding something. It's a few hours of your time.
Yeah. So, you know, you remember a guy named Don Ross, the Ripper Ross?
Yeah.
Don Ross. He was a wrestler.
And yeah.
Yeah, he wrote for a lot of the mags back in like late 80s, early 90s. He passed on. But I got to know Don pretty well, and he said something that, you know, people say stuff along the way that makes sense. And he said, you know, everything works to a degree, but it's to the degree that it works. I thought that was kind of interesting information. And then I believe now that from being in the sport as long as I was in bodybuilding, that if you really want to know how nutrition and training works, and if you're dealing with somebody who's a student of the game, which I think that I've become, mm-hmm. Then that's the person that you want to ask as to what's really going on, because we know we try everything. Our bodies are our lab experiment, and we really start finding out, you know, there's guys out there, John, that they just want the bodybuilders. They just want somebody else to tell them what to do and what to take. And they never learn it from that perspective. So they don't know.
Right. Even though, and then as soon as they hit a stumbling block, they don't know what to do.
They don't know.
Understand anything.
Right. You know, and then of course, you know, like Einstein said, he said, you know, real knowledge is through experience. And my dad used to say it in a different way. It's hard to replace firsthand experience when you go through that and you really learn it at that level. And that's what's missing in the industry. And it has been for a long time, as far as I'm concerned, the whole time that I've been in it. I think it's a little bit worse now with social media personally, but
I completely agree. Social media is like training people to have ADD.
It's true.
We need to be better at focusing on one thing, not jumping from, you know, between 100 things and not understanding anything of what we see. I see people that'll make comments on social media posts, and it's clear by their comment that they didn't even read the post.
Yeah.
Like, read the caption. They don't even know what they're looking at. They're so impatient. They want to shoot their mouth off so bad.
Yeah.
They don't even understand the subject that they're discussing before they claim to be an expert on it.
Of course.
Like,
John, what is your PhD in?
Biomedical engineering.
Biomedical engineering. Okay. Now you, in your bio here, you said you spent years researching and developing improved approaches to health. Can you describe that a little bit for us?
So the first thing I did was really based on my mother's osteoporosis. My mother's diagnosed with osteoporosis. And she didn't want to take the medications, and I understood why when I read some of the side effects. And I'm not anti-pharma, but I'm in favor of people learning what they're putting in their body. And after she learned that, and I, you know, in turn learned it, I thought, okay, yeah, you can, let's see if you can avoid this. And so what I said is, there doesn't seem to be, like, you know, they say things like, and this was when she was diagnosed, it's like 14 years ago now, well, physical activity is great for bone health. Well, yeah, my mom played tennis. My mom was super athletic. She would go on 20-mile hikes. Like, clearly that's not, like, that recommendation is either lacking in specificity or it's just wrong. Like, which is it? So I'm going to go find out. So I told her, I said, look, there's probably a group of people out there somewhere that have super high bone density, and I'm going to find them, and I'm going to find out why, like what they did, and then we'll apply that to you. Because I looked at, you know, like porosity of the bone, like, well, this only happens because of disuse. And Okay, disuse. Well, how do we use the bone to such a high degree we trigger the growth of it? And so within days of starting a literature review, I found that group. I found the outliers, and the outliers were gymnasts. Like gymnasts, because of the high impact they go through, the rate at which they hit the ground, they get 10 times their body weight through their hip joint.
Holy crap.
Nobody squats 10 times their body weight. So it was a very unique loading experience, very brief, but very powerful. And they have the highest bone density in the world by far. Because of the impact.
Yeah.
Now, they also get injured all the time from impact. There's a reason gymnasts retire on average at 19 years old. Yeah. So telling my mother to go out for gymnastics was not the right thing to do. But what I told her was, I'm going to develop like a physical therapy, physical medicine type device or series of devices that are going to be able to give you the benefit of high impact without the risks of injury, of fracture. Yeah. And so that's what I did. And that's now called OsteoStrong. I mean, these aren't home devices. They're over $100,000 and they go in a clinic, but they're robotic and they have a computer screen in front of you that shows you your previous bone density performance and then today's bone density performance. And it's really like a functional bone test, where you're putting pressure on an axis. So, you know, from end to end on a bone, how much force can I pinch the bone with?
Yeah.
And it's voluntary. Like, so it's your own comfort that's your guide. So if you drank too many vasoconstrictors and you have some joint irritation, too much coffee kind of thing, you're not going to do as well as a day that you're a little more balanced.
Yeah.
So it's very simple, straightforward. The franchise clinic is called OsteoStrong. There's one in near Venice Beach.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you want to check that out.
Yeah. So this machine that you're talking about, is this something that, if you could paint maybe a clear picture for me, is it somewhere that you put like on each end of your body, and then do you have a switch that you're creating pressure?
No.
Okay.
What you do is, let's see if you can still get the audio. If I'm going to trip and fall, I mean, you rarely plan to trip and fall, but if you have to trip and fall, you're going to get your arms out in front of you like this.
Yeah.
So 120 degree angle, right? From upper to lower arm, and the back of the hand in line with the clavicle.
Okay.
So everybody, when they trip and fall, if they have the time to react, they do exactly that. Bang, like right there. Little kids know to do this as soon as they start walking. So it's just instinctive.
Right.
And so you get in that position, and in this position, I can either produce or absorb the greatest amount of force. So, and this is what I got from gymnastics. I looked at the way the human body absorbed these impacts. And so I thought, okay, so impact position, and then we self-load. And so these devices are like the upper extremity device looks a little bit like a chest press. You hold some really fat handles because that distributes more load over your whole hand, right?
Makes sense.
And you push away, and you might see just like a couple millimeters of movement, but the movement is from the compression of bone. The device actually doesn't move at all. But there is movement, so it's not isometric.
Right.
And people can put over 1,000 pounds to their upper extremities. I've seen athletic people, like 1,200, 1,500 pounds. And that acts as the catalyst. So the bone, I mean, imagine, you know, like a long bone here being pressed on from end to end, and it distorts. And then when it springs back into position, all those little areas, you know, like the inside of a bone looks like a honeycomb.
Mm-hmm.
When all those little walls get bent, they don't care for that. Sort of like a muscle. You know, you take a muscle to exhaustion, and the muscle's like, okay, we got to remodel some stuff. So the bone remodels, pulls in minerals and recalcifies, builds more little walls and becomes more powerful.
So it's adapting to its environment, basically.
Yeah, that's right. You put it in an extreme environment and it adapts.
Yeah. Now
it has to be the right extreme environment.
Right. Right. So my question then is, when you're doing this range of motion, is it a partial? Is it a full range of motion? Is it both?
The range of motion for the upper extremities might be 1 or 2 millimeters.
So really not very much at all.
Not very much at all. The range of motion in the lower extremities, because there's a lot more bone mass there. And there's also joint compression, which increases the thickness of tendons and ligaments when you compress it like that. That can be 3 inches of movement. For me, it's like 4.
Yeah.
I had an orthopedic surgeon do stop motion photography on me. And it looks like 4 inches of from my hip joint to my feet disappear.
Really?
And it's because the long bones are being compressed and then they spring back into position. That's cool.
That's fascinating. And are there a certain amount of reps that you do, or is it just, how do you determine when enough is enough?
One experience. One exposure to load. And there's a great study. It was in one of the American College of Sports Medicine journals. I don't recall which one at the moment. I'm going to think of it in a second, but a great article showing that one load exposure to an osteogenic load starts the process. And that's another point I like making in both of my devices. Like, the body only needs one stimulus. Like, you know, when I go out to get a tan, you know, somebody says, if you want to get a tan, how many sets do you do in the sun? Crazy question. Because just go out there one time. Yeah. And, you know, if you really want to stimulate the most, you have a very intense stimulus. Now, I'm speaking from a weight training perspective in a very abstract perspective. But you really only need one experience of the highest level of intensity that can be handled by the target tissue in that extreme environment that we're creating to get that adaptation. So you only do it one time. And then we have clinical data. I did the first published trial in London. Now, I wasn't the principal investigator. I was just kind of observing, basically making sure they use the equipment right. And so we saw elderly deconditioned females put 6 times their body weight, 7 times their body weight through their hip joint. And like, these are like non-exercising people, like lifetime non-exercisers.
Yeah.
And so like we have a lot of capability we don't use. And so as I was watching this, some of the doctors that are participating in this, some of the physicians at the hospital were test subjects, and principal investigator was from University of East London. And they kept asking us these questions like, well, what do people lift in the gym compared to this? Cause that seems crazy that these people are lifting this much. Now, because it was developed in the United States, I had it in pounds and I didn't have it in metric. And a lot of the people in East London aren't even from England, because people in England do understand the imperial measurement system, but they don't like they come from a country that has the metric system. Mm-hmm. So like they were like that particular neighborhood that we pulled our test subjects from, there were people from India, there were people from Africa, there were people Cambodia, Sri Lanka, a couple places like that. So everyone was used to the metric system, so they didn't really understand what the pounds meant.
Right.
And nor did they care, because they noticed that the number was going up every time and they were told that was good. So they're like, okay, you know, I'm getting better. And, you know, we're sitting there thinking like, wow, like these people are really loading their bodies. And they all had incredible results with building bone density.
Yeah.
But when you look at what they did and then compare that to the NANES database, that is typically like a good portion of the ACSM publications come out of analysis of the NANES database. And for your listeners that don't know, that's like the biggest health and like health and medical survey that includes DEXA scans for body composition, DEXA scans for bone density. And they generally pull in about 1,000 people per year and then catalog that data so you can always look back and reanalyze it. When I looked at the NAINS database on what people normally load the lower extremities with, and this is going to be so disappointing for a bodybuilder and probably some of the listeners, the average person starts off with 1.3 multiples body weight when they start exercising. What is considered the average advanced athlete is 1.53 multiples of body weight.
Really?
I was like, wow. So nobody's trying. Okay, got it. Like that's not what, you know, you ever did, but like, anyway, the point is that's where the majority of people stop. But here, these same type of people, these average population people, I mean, it was a random sample that was collected for this project, and these were all, I think the average age was 66. Yeah, average age of study subjects was 66 years old, lifetime non-exercisers. So, you know, obviously it wasn't like they had to fight themselves from going to CrossFit so they could do this study. Like, they don't even know what CrossFit is, never heard of it. So they were perfect examples of the regular population, and it shows what the regular population normally does given conventional weights and then what they are actually capable of. There's a sevenfold difference.
Unbelievable.
And you can apply this to an elite athlete too, because they're starting off at a higher number and they're not getting to that sevenfold capacity, because everybody who lifts picks the weight that they can handle in the weaker range of motion.
Right.
But you actually have seven times the capability in that impact ready range of motion. Just nobody knew it. Yeah. And so I was like the first guy to document this. And I looked at the data and I'm like, wow, I actually have documentation that weightlifting is a waste of time. Or said in a different way. Now that's the title of my book, which comes out in 30 days. But I mean, it's really going to be inflammatory. I can't wait. But ultimately, I mean, it's like, I don't say resistance training is a waste of time, obviously, but it's that the way we apply weights to the body right now, where I'm holding, you know, X amount of weight here and the same X amount of weight here. Well, what we really need is X amount of weight here and, you know, maybe 4 or 5X here, because 7X would be like, you know, the absolute maximum capacity. So we do repetitions for a reason. Like you want to exhaust the ATP, glycogen and creatine phosphate. You want to get a sarcoplasmic effect. That's a huge part of bodybuilding, but that's also a huge part of like being in the NFL. You got to grow.
Yeah.
You can't be, you know, just a sprinter. Like even the wide receivers, you know, they need to have some size on them too. So like that's important. And then we also need that myofibril effect, which we're going to get so much of. And you really helped me understand in Serious Growth with looking at the periodization, like there's really two ways to look at what you want a muscle to do. There's really heavy, explosive, extreme, low repetition type stuff, the myofibril growth. And then, of course, there's also a neurological benefit to that.
Right.
And so it's a combination between being able to switch more on faster, because there's a lot of athletes that don't even use the muscle they have adequately because they can't, you know, explode. But then there's also the exhaustion of the fuel in the cell. And so all this stuff was going through my head, and I said, I got to build another product. And that's where the X3 came from.
That's interesting. I wanted to ask you, with regard to your population, did you find, or your studies that you did, do you find that that certain ethnic backgrounds naturally carry a higher density, bone density than others? Did you find anything like that that was kind of predominant?
Yeah. But it mostly has to do with the thickness. So when looking at bone density, there is a grams per cubic centimeter grams per centimeter squared also that they'll give you. But then there's also fracture likelihood. And like Samoans and Tongans have very low fracture likelihood, even if they have low bone density. Why? It's because the gauge of bone, the thickness of bone is different.
So that's just part of their genetic makeup then.
Is that that's right. So, you know, they have like you can look at the thickness of your radius, you know, right here by pinching your wrist. And, you know, whatever, it's 3/4 of an inch thick. And then you can go to a Tongan or Samoan person who may even look slighter in frame than you, and they'll have a thicker radius bone.
Why do you think that is? Because I'm assuming that it's some sort of an adaptation from way back. Why is it them?
Well, random mutation, and then they survive better.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, they just, you know, survival of the fittest. Like, right. They were better for their environment, so they thrived.
The I'm assuming that the bone density is, like you said, with more explosive movements. Then when you're doing strength moves, obviously you're going to get a better adaptation of bone or better response to bone density than bodybuilder who typically is more volume type conditioning. Would I be correct on that?
You know, the shame of it is the minimum dosage of force to go into the bone in the hip joint. That's the most important place. So, you know, I mean, people ask, well, what about the clavicle? Well, we really don't know, and I'll explain why. It's because medicine is focused on testing the hip joint because hip fractures are the ones that are associated with death. So, like, you break a collarbone, it may hurt like hell. You may lose some mobility in your arm, but it's not going to kill you. Probably not. So medicine doesn't care much for that research. But when we look at, how we test this is, like, the best way to test it is looking for turnover markers. So we do like a CTX test, blood test, which looks for catabolic activity of bone turnover, so older bone tissue breakdown. It's normal, the bone has a metabolism. There's always a catabolic process going on and an anabolic process. But when you're young, your anabolic process is here and your catabolic process is here. And then as you get older, like, you know, this might be, you know, 50s, and then it kind of, there's more catabolic activity. So you do a blood marker test for catabolic activity. CTX is the most common one there. And then the anabolic activity is called P1NP. And then so you test the blood for the evidence that bone is being built. And you just want the P1NP score to be higher than the CTX score. And so, and with one load exposure, like I'm talking about, of a high load that's over 4.2 multiples, like, you can see somebody who's, you know, here's their anabolic level, here's their catabolic level. 5 minutes after they do like an OsteoStrong session, this happens.
Wow.
And right, you see a slowing of the breakdown and an increase in the anabolic measures. But with weightlifting, we don't get to the minimum dose response. We don't get past the 4.2. You don't know many guys who squat 4.2 times their body weight.
Good point.
Yeah. So weightlifting, I mean, we need something like OsteoStrong, which is limited range of impact range, which will trigger the effect. And so that, you know, that's why OsteoStrong is a successful business. There's 130 clinics around the world in 8 different countries now. But like another way, which is doubtful this will work, is with variable resistance. But you know, that's my other product, but that's way more targeted at muscle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you had anybody actually get hurt from doing the OsteoStrong? Like breaking bone, you know, fracturing a bone or anything like that?
We have hundreds of thousands of people using it. So ultimately, you have hundreds of thousands of people doing anything. You know, people break their necks on by stepping on a tennis ball and slipping. You know,
I didn't know if it was something that was really concerning, especially people that are older like that.
It's very, like, extremely low. We have, I had a discussion with an insurance carrier that looked at OsteoStrong versus like regular gym type insurance, and OsteoStrong was just a tiny fraction of what happens in regular gyms for the horrible stuff that, you know, people drop weight racks,
themselves,
fall off the treadmill, drop weight on their feet.
I think CrossFit has the highest injury rate that's out there, last time I read.
Yeah, that's well documented.
Well documented. But, you know, I saw a documentary on the guy. I don't think he's with the CrossFit now anymore. I think he said something that got him in trouble and he stepped down. But he did an interview and he said, you know, they were making so much fucking money that even with all the people that were getting hurt, it didn't even matter. That's basically what he said. They were getting sued, but they were on one side, they were getting sued like crazy because of all the injuries, but they were making so much money on the other end of that thing, it didn't even matter. Go figure. I guess that's the
market. I'm shocked he said that.
Yeah, no, he did.
The other stuff he said.
Like, yeah, exactly. So tell me, so the X3 now, it says here that it's a technology that's proven to develop muscle much faster than any conventional weight training. So let's talk about that for a while.
So when I did that research in London, I realized, wow, like there's got to be a better way. Because I had been an avid weightlifter since the seventh grade when I bought your book. I never really got a whole lot out of it. Like if I were wearing a shirt, nobody would know I worked out. You know, if I took my shirt off, you know, like somebody might be like, you know, you lift. Yeah, I mean, sure, I guess. So I was lifting 4 days a week, you know, like three sets per exercise, like that kind of thing, like just like everybody else, nothing special. And I never really got anything out of it. And I always thought I was kind of wasting my time, but I also didn't want to stop because, you know, I knew that whatever I had built over 20 years of weightlifting was something, you know. I certainly want to at least hang on to that. But it was generally a frustrating subject. And I'm looking at the data from the bone density medical devices, and I'm like, I've just proven weightlifting to be incorrect. So I've got to come out with a product. And so what we need is a weight that changes. So like I said, like I need X amount of weight here and maybe 4 or 5X here. And the same thing with a row type exercise to get the lats, and you know, we need that with a squat. And so I decided I was going to build a product that was going to satisfy all of those exercises and was going to be super compact. And it's not a travel device or anything, but you can throw it in a drawer in your house. So like, you know, like the people who like, you know, make their wives or husbands park outside so they can use the garage as like their home gym.
Yeah.
You can sell all that stuff because your X3 fits in a drawer.
Mm.
And it works better. First year I put on 30 pounds of muscle. And I mean, this was like, I didn't change my nutrition. I had been ketogenic for 13 years already. I did that when Body Opus came out. You remember that book? Duchesne?
Oh yeah, Dan Duchesne. Yeah, okay.
Dan Duchesne wrote that book. Like everything in that book was an insane recommendation that probably nobody should follow. And then I got to the keto section and I was like, oh, I could do this.
Yeah.
Like this seems smart. This makes perfect sense, and there's research right there. Like I was like, yeah, all the other stuff was like some of the worst ideas I've ever read, but that made sense. So I think the Bell brothers are actually working on a documentary about him, which will be cool.
Yeah.
You know, Chris and Mark Bell, you know those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd already been ketogenic, and just because of the variable resistance, I started putting on mass for the first time in my adult life, and I was over 40 years old. And I'm 43 now. And so the first 2 years was 45 pounds of muscle. And, you know, I didn't start off. I was chunky when I started, and I started to lean down a little bit and continue to do so, because my biochemistry was just using the calories I was taking in differently.
Yeah.
And it was successful.
So how does this work for your, why don't you paint, sort of how do you work train legs with this system that you're talking about?
Front squat format, you can either do a regular two-legged squat, but I like people graduating to the single leg squat, which is not a lunge, because you don't lock any joints. So you keep constant tension. That's another thing. We always keep constant tension on musculature. I want people to, I suppose I should explain why I like the single leg squat. Basically, the quads and the glutes are like the biggest muscles in the body. And they require the most oxygenated blood when they're contracting. So when you train one at a time, you have double the amount of resources going into that leg.
It makes sense.
Right. And it's, you know, the other thing is functionally, and I kind of don't like the word functional, because the function of a muscle is it shortens, right? I mean, you can say anything is functional, but humans run and walk on one leg at a time. So unless you're a kangaroo, you should really use one leg at a time. Mm-hmm. And so I really focus on that one leg squat. And when you exhaust from that, it is, you'll see a training difference in your quads by the day. Like, you'll look in the mirror in the next morning and your quads will look different.
Okay. So a front format squat, but you're saying this, it fits in a drawer. What exactly is it? You put something on the muscle when you're training it?
Mm-mm. No. Well, this is the most important part of it. So, I mean, it's an Olympic bar.
Okay.
You can see as I roll it, the hook stays, you know, level with the ground.
Okay.
So there's a steel bar that goes through the middle, and the exterior is anodized aluminum.
Okay.
But, and then these hooks are stainless steel. And so you hook banding that is far beyond what you could commercially get. So there's four bands that come with it. And then there's a fifth one called the Elite Band, or people who are much stronger. So when I do a deadlift with this thing, at the top, I'm over 600 pounds. I'm at 615 pounds. And when I'm at the bottom, I'm like at maybe like 180 pounds.
Yeah.
So it's like 180 pound squat or a deadlift at the bottom. And then as I approach the top, I got over 600 pounds on. Well, that much more matches my biomechanics, and I can just go to a deeper level of exhaustion.
Yeah. So this is band. You have bands that you're training on. With
right.
Them. There you go.
And then there's a second ground. I don't like to call it bands because people hear that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Think they know what that is. It's sort of like, you know, you can have four rubber tires and it's not a Lamborghini. It's just four rubber tires. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about and who doesn't know anything about automobiles and is probably prone to comment on the internet without any information whatsoever will be like, just, you know, a pile of four tires and be like, hey, check out this Lamborghini.
Yeah.
So, you know, that happens. So I'm very careful to call it a variable resistance device. And, you know, like the bands are actually inconsequential. Like I may replace the band someday with some other type of loop that will deliver variable force. But the bar is the important part. And then the other important part is the ground you stand on. There's an inch tall plate that you stand on. And then it's made out of, I forgot the type of steel, It's a very powerful type of steel. And the banding runs underneath, so the band can flex, but it doesn't twist your ankles. Because if you tried to use these bands that are, you know, like 600 plus pounds, and you tried to do like a push-up with them, yeah, you'd probably break your wrist. Or if you tried to do a deadlift, you'd break your ankle.
All right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're gonna get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief in the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
So
I would imagine that because this has the appropriate tension based on biomechanics, that you don't have to do a lot of sets. Maybe one, maybe two.
One set, right. Because it's a much deeper level of exhaustion.
Right.
You are so wiped out at the end of that one set. Now, we go a little bit higher reps to ensure exhaustion, and also the weight is so high. I just don't want anybody dropping.
Yeah.
You know, like my chest press is 540 pounds at the top. I don't want to drop that on myself.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't go for, like...
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on Google Podcast apps and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at SeriousGrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.
How strong do you think they are?
Yeah.
You know, you see that with bodybuilders, too. They do, like, a bunch of shitty reps, and they're, like, with regular weight, and they're, like, oh, check out what I did, and you're, like... Okay. Although I will credit CrossFit for something. CrossFit weights, you know, the fake plastic weights where everything looks like a 45-pound plate.
Yeah.
It's great because there was a whole wave of clowns out there that are like, check out my 700-pound squat. And you can see the plates just rattling because they have no mass to them. Yeah, that's like 5 pounds. That's not 40.
That reminds me of when I was first getting into bodybuilding. It's about 6 years I'm into it. I had never been to Gold's Gym at this point. I was in Visalia where I live. And I went to Gold's Gym that I finally got enough. I thought, I'm going to go down there and see what the hell's going on. Because I would read the magazines, John, and I'm thinking, how can these fuckers be that much stronger than me? I'm not weak, you know? Yeah. I go down there, I started finding out, you know, the real scoop of stuff down there, you know, and even like with these demonstrations, a lot of fake weights were in between when they did these demos. And it was so, they brought this 145 pound dumbbell weights. I was doing a photo shoot there and I see him walking out of the back room with the big ass weights just hanging onto it with two fingers. I think, what the hell is that? I never knew about that, you know? And there's these fake weights that they use when they did these photo shoots. They spray water on your face and have you open your mouth and yell and get the veins out. And they got that shot. I mean, because it's too damn hard to hold a weight like that, you know. But anyway, it was just.
What happens if they have the event and nobody can pick it up?
Yeah, it was just, you know, it's like everything else. So, you know, it's not, unless you're in the thick of it, you don't really see everything. Even like with the guys like Mensur and Dorian, from my experiences, because what you're talking about sounds like, you know, a part of what their philosophy was with Arthur Jones, that, you know, that one rep max. Frontwards, and yeah, this is what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, you just don't need more than one stimulus to create the maximum adaptive response if the stimulus is powerful enough.
Yeah, that's the key.
The reason people do multiple sets with weights is because the stimulus is really not that great.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And I see that you're into the NFL, NBA players and all that. Those guys are using it too.
Yeah, I got a book endorsement from the strength coach of the Miami Heat. They've switched over and they just use X3 because it's safer and their guys are getting stronger.
Yeah.
And so the, yeah, I got a great endorsement. You know, like pro teams and pro athletes don't endorse a lot of, especially like these guys weren't paid. Like we have more than 20 athletes that endorse us in one professional team. And you know, they did that because it works.
Yeah.
Not because they didn't get paid anything.
Do you have to go around and with this new device that you have, are you the one that's certifying the trainers that are working inside these camps? How's that working to get those guys training on?
Right now, we're not doing that yet. But yeah, that'll come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back in the day, I was, you know, I got certified as a strength and conditioning specialist, blah, blah, blah. And I worked with a lot of athletes. And it was interesting to work with some of those guys back then, especially baseball players, because back then I was during the days when Mark McGwire and Jose Canseco were coming through. They kind of changed the face of baseball with respect to weight training because nobody wanted to weight train. They were afraid it's going to mess up their swing and all this kind of shit. Of course, we know that it doesn't if it's done correctly. But I guess why I'm asking you that is because I found those guys sometimes to be very difficult to change over. They've been around long enough that they've done enough weight training, almost to the point where, you know, if they came to me, but they were almost like trying to tell me what to do, even though they're hiring me. And I really knew more than they did at that point. So I'm just wondering, you know, if you have, you'll probably have to, as you said, you're going to have somebody come in or yourself to make them sure that they understand how to use it correctly to get the most out of it.
I travel a lot.
Yeah, I bet.
And I see, and you know, now with coronavirus, I do a lot of Skype and Zoom calls because I need to make sure that they're going to use it correctly.
Yeah. How many times a week when you're using this system for putting on muscle mass? By the way, before I ask that question, can this develop explosive power? With this training that you have, the X3?
It can, but like so many things, you know, nothing does everything.
Right.
If I were training for explosiveness, I would have people do drills for explosiveness.
Okay.
Like switching musculature on, you know, like plyometric push-ups kind of thing.
Yeah.
Plyometric squats. Like those are that's the right tool for that job.
Yeah.
And that's a neurological job. Most people don't realize explosiveness has very little to do with how much muscle you have. It's how quick you can turn muscle on.
Exactly. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, don't take one tool that's designed for building mass. Like when you lift slowly and you get to a really high weight, like you have a high level of myofibril growth. That's the only way to explain that. But then there are other people who wouldn't be able to lift it slowly, but who can just like explode with it and use momentum to move a weight. I'm talking about a regular weight, not X3, because there's no momentum with X3, which is a great thing, because the people who like to do that sort of thing, which does have a high injury risk, You don't have momentum with latex. Yeah. It's totally unforgiving.
Right.
You're actually encouraged just through your own reflexes to move slow and in a controlled manner.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's those are really drills that you need to do to switch more muscle on. I tell people, you need to look at them as completely different subjects.
Yeah, and that's very true. I'll tell you one of the things that plays to what you're saying. When I was in Bulgaria, I studied with during those days I was in Bulgaria, Russia, and Czechoslovakia. Mm-hmm. And the Bulgarians at that point were the ones that were dominating after 9 years. And they showed they talked about what you're talking about. They said, they have all this weight that they're lifting off the ground. They said, we're not strong enough to lift this all the way up to here. We just lift it up to about waist high and the athletes jump underneath the bar. That's an explosiveness.
Yeah.
That's how they did that. And when you started watching that, especially in slow motion, these fuckers were quick. You know, yeah. I mean, even to the point they said, like in a 40 yard dash, they were hard to beat in 40 yards because of that muscle explosion.
Yeah.
You know, so that makes sense to what you're saying. And the other thing too, which I would think that you'd have to be very careful about when it comes to muscle mass, is that because athletics is a combination of strength and explosive power, if you get too much, I know back in the old days, these strength coaches in high schools, they had their athletes doing 5 sets of 5, you know? So they built a lot of strength. They made them strong, but they were slow because they weren't doing that explosive power and those drills that you're talking about.
Right.
So I would imagine.
They didn't see it as different.
Right.
It has a completely different effect. Now, I also, the target market for X3 is not bodybuilders. It's typically busy professionals. Because busy professionals are like the industry that exercises.
Yeah.
It's like there's 1 out of 1,000 people who identifies with bodybuilding. A lot of people read bodybuilding.com, which does them no favors. It's just like an abomination of health literature. But it is their goal is to be in shape. They want to look good when they go to the beach. Right. They want their kids to think their dad is a superhero.
Yeah.
Right? Like that, this is what people really want. Most people don't even want to look like bodybuilders.
That's very true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they probably
take it. That's gross.
Right. They take it if you made it real easy for them, but we all know it's not easy. So, no, they're good. Yeah. If they can swap out 10 or 20 pounds of fat for muscle, they would look like a superhero.
Yeah.
And especially to their kids and their wife. And that is a massive victory, massive for most guys.
Yeah.
So that's really our target market. Mostly because these are the people who are willing to read a little bit of science. You know, they'll read a couple paragraphs and go, okay, like this sounds really good. This sounds like it makes sense.
Yeah.
So they make the determination that it sounds good. And then they cross-reference that with the fact that they've been lifting for years and they haven't got jack shit out of it.
Yeah.
So it's like, I might as well give this a shot. Yeah. Weightlifting does almost nothing. So I was just, you know, wondering if I should go into like triathlons now or something. Yeah. So I'll give this a shot. And then they do well with it. And did I even answer your question, or I just go down a different path?
No, I think you did. No, I think you did. Okay. It struck me because I just thought about those days when the coaches in the gym were just lifting purely for strength, and right. The athletes really weren't, you know, they really weren't performing as well as they should have on the field.
I know where I wanted to go. These guys who are like our target market, lifting speed, every once in a while, some of them says, well, I should do some fast reps and some slow reps, right? And I'm like, no, like you're not training for an event where you're going to need that speed.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you want to do speed drills, okay, but don't do them with X3 necessarily. You can, but like I would do speed drills the way speed drills have been perfected. Like that's something in health and fitness that works pretty well.
Yeah.
And I would tell them, what's the name of that plyometric board that you kind of hook?
Not
wear a vest.
Oh, I don't know.
One where you wear a vest and you hook yourself to a board and you do all kinds of upward work. And then you can, if you can nail it to the, or, you know, like mount it to the floor, screw it in the concrete, you can do work going different directions.
Yeah.
Like if you're a wide receiver, you need one of those.
Yeah. You got to mimic.
If you're not a wide receiver, you don't need one of those.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where, you know, the body becomes dysfunction. Being a sports-specific trainer, you know, one of the things I learned with athletes, especially in baseball, but it applies to all sports, because my kid played pro baseball for Kansas City Royals.
Oh, wow.
I got to know the scouts back then. I was very fascinated by it. They said, you know, in each position, there's these the priorities that the athletes need to have, which are the most important to the least important. And that started making a lot of sense to me, you know, and how and where you put athletes based on, you know, variables, and then train not only for the sport, but you're training to that position. And I found it to be very, very useful.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. This is really fascinating stuff, John. I mean, and you know, here's the thing that I'm very always attracted to, because I've tried to be a student of the game and to know the why of everything. and you're that guy, you know, and there needs to be more of you out there because, you know, I guess it's like anything else. It's very few that really, they really know their shit. And it's obvious that you know yours, you know,
I think I have like, and you had this too, but this wasn't really where you were going. But the ability to understand something is one thing. The ability to teach it.
Another animal.
Yeah. And you got to have both of those things. Yep. You got to like really know the subject.
Yeah.
And then you got to be able to teach it to people and get people excited about it. And I think if we look at the success of both OsteoStrong and X3, it's really like, I just got good at teaching people.
Yeah. No, I can tell your demeanor, the way you present your information. You know, I had a coach one time who was and this happens more often than not. He was a great running back in college, spectacular. As a fucking coach, he just couldn't communicate that to his athletes to make them be that, you know, athlete on the field. He had to show you all the time, but he couldn't show and tell. He couldn't do the telling to where they really understood that. And that's not an easy thing to do. It's hard. It's hard to be able to do that, what you're talking about. No. And no, but I can tell you, and I'm very attracted to that, you know? I mean, I was telling Phil cracked up because he's known me a long time and he saw me dress up like this and he goes, "What the fuck? You're all dressed up. You look great." I said, "You know,
I feel really underdressed. I wear a tie all the time. Yeah, I just like, damn it, man. Like, I could have worn a tie."
No, but the thing about that is that when I was bodybuilding, I didn't give a shit how I looked. I look homeless, you know. All I cared about was looking on stage a certain way. Mm-hmm. And then after I got out of the game, I needed something to motivate me. And John, this did. This is my new bodybuilding. It's a lot safer for me. You know, you know what I mean? So, but it's just, I take the same approach and I learn shit to the nth degree. And I try to communicate that to these fucking trainers that are out there, you know, learn this stuff to the nth degree, because there's a reason why, which I was shocked when I saw this, 95% of the trainers out there fail. Fucking fail. And I know why, because I see the half-assed approaches that they take, and like you were talking about,
understanding of science, it's like I said, like what percentage of people are actually in shape?
Exactly.
1/10 to 1%.
Yeah, it translates.
So why do we keep following the way the industry has always done it when 1/10 to 1% of people succeed?
I know.
You invest in an investment company that lost all but 1/10 to 1% of the money that you invested.
Yeah, right. Look at it that way.
Did you invest with those guys?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah. Hey, so John, I want to thank you very much for taking your time to come on the Serious Growth Podcast. I mean, we told a lot of truth today.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate when I meet somebody where I can keep learning stuff. I'm very enthusiastic and I have passion for all this. And you got me inspired some more. So I do appreciate that.
Awesome.
And I'd like
to get an advanced copy of my book also.
Beautiful. Yeah. While we're here, if you'd like to feel free to promote whatever products that you'd like. I know you have a little bit at the top, but feel free to do that.
Yeah. You really blindsided me with that one. Normally I try not to promote, though I did invent two things. So people might be able to talk about that.
Come on, tell us about that. Again.
Right. So yeah, I mean, x3bar.com is where you can go and read more about the science of X3 and look at, you know, the athletes who are using it. Also, there's some before and after pictures. People seem to be more interested in the athletes who are pictured using it, because before and afters can be faked, I guess. Yeah. But you can't really fake pro athletes using your product. So I think people really like looking into that. And then also the science and the big press section where we've been featured, LA Times, Entrepreneur, Forbes.
Nice.
So, so x3bar.com or Jake Wish Biomedical. I know my last name is not easy to spell. Don't worry about it. Just go to x3bar.com. And then, And then on Instagram, it's DRJAQUISH. By the time you get to JAQ, you'll know which one is me.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, listen, I'd like to have you back on again, and we'll do I'd like to get, like I said at the top, you and Phil and myself, I think that'd be a really fun interview to do. I mean, yeah. Phil's the one that got me, he, you know, directed me to you, and now I understand why. Yeah. But I'd like to do this again sometime if you'd like to do that.
Absolutely.
All right, man. Well, yeah,
we'll do it a couple times. This is super.
Yeah, no, I'd like to, because there's a lot to learn here. So I'd like to keep on top of what's going on with your product always.
Awesome. Anyway, thanks, Dale.
All right, man. Well, you have a meaningful day, if that's necessary, or at least have a good day. And
I'll do both.
And be safe. You know, during this whole pandemic, one of the things I've talked about, and I don't think it's talked about enough, I'm getting off on maybe a mini rant here, is I don't think we're talking enough about building the body's immune system, because if you do that, it can pretty much fight off just about anything that's out there. That's my opinion.
Yep. My hemoglobin A1C score is 4.
Yeah.
And so, I mean,
I just had some labs done. I think so too. And I just believe in that. And, you know, we've been, we never stopped trending. We just keep on going. But anyway, all right, man. We'll talk soon someday. Okay, John?
Yes. Awesome.
Take care of yourself.
All right. See you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.